You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, and with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder. Dr. Emder, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Great to be on the show again.
I'm so glad that you are. You know you're a regular on the show now.
Yeah, I need to come up with a different
I do.
You look really great today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show so I can look at how pretty you are. That might be better.
Okay. We won't tell Mrs. Emder, but I'm sure she's listening to the show. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, dear.
Anyway. Oh, very nice. So, well, happy Saturday. And now that it's the weekend, there's a lot to do. How was your week?
My week was great. Worked real hard and built up a lot of time off, Chet. So I got to take that.
Nice.
Yeah, so...
you'll be taking something like that in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
Going off.
Yeah, I'm going to try to go to Alaska with my son and do some father-son bonding.
Oh, yeah, just, flying away like the jet setter. I think maybe I'll just take off to Alaska. That's
a
good trip.
I've been working on this trip for about a year.
Nice.
So the best thing about a new hobby is you get to shop for the hobby.
Yeah.
So shout out to SoCal Fly Fishing Shop here in San Diego.
Nice. Is it a good shop?
Oh, it's just my favorite shop. I mean, they got great equipment. They have a Sims fly fishing equipment, which is my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Do they have the waders and all the big tube things? And
I'm now working on my third pair of waders.
Impressive.
My third pair of boots, and
you've got like a shoe collection to rival mine.
Yeah, I think.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know about that.
No, I'm lying. I'm just trying to make you feel better.
So we're shopping for the big trip. So that's probably one of the biggest fun parts of going on vacation.
No kidding. And the fact that you're being active. I mean, talk about healthy aging, which is what our whole show is designed to be about. But at least you're taking the initiative and doing something. So because a couple weeks ago or a month ago now, I got scuba certified.
Wow.
Did I tell you that?
I think so. That's
you think so?
Cool.
Okay. So there's this really cool place. I actually did it right here in La Jolla, Ocean Enterprises, which is a super cool place. They were amazing as far as being very flexible with my time because as a working person, it was like going back to school though. You got homework, you have to read, not to dissuade anyone from doing this, but it was like scuba certification or MBA. Like I was kind of on the fence with that.
So you have to
just
know what you have to know what you're doing because
with the scuba, your life's on the line, So I was laughing with people at work because I was saying the very first thing, basically, they have you watch the video and the first couple pages is like, this is your lungs. When you go up, they kind of expand. When you go down, they tighten a little bit. And they use the example of a balloon and full on, and when the balloon goes up, it pops, So all of a sudden, it's not fun anymore. You're instantly realizing that this is a life or death situation. And so you need to be more focused in the class.
I think it's very important to be certified and my hat's off to you, I've dove actually in Australia.
Have you really? That's my goal.
I know.
The Great Barrier Reef is where I'm trying to be headed at some point.
I dove in Cairns.
Cairns.
Cairns. They all pronounce it differently there.
No, they don't. They pronounce it Cairns, but Americans do what they want with it.
But it's got an R in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's like C-A-I... are any I have no idea. We'll ask my husband.
That's the land down under, so they kind of have it screwed up.
Backwards.
But anyway, the way it works down there is I'm going out on the dive boat. Actually, it's a tourist boat, and they said, who wants to dive the Great Barrier Reef? And I raised my hand, and they said, well, do you have any medical problems? I said, I have hypertension. They said, well, you can't dive. You got hypertension. I said, but, I'm a doctor. I'm controlled. They said, well,
I can just write my own prescription. I can say I'm okay.
Yeah. So they say, well, just sign here. They had me watch a 5-minute video And they said, you know, you just have to be able to get in the water, you know, clear your mask. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, hold on to this rope. And while I'm holding on to the rope, the boat pulls away. And the next thing I know, I'm on the bottom of the Great Barrier Reef.
No kidding.
And this drop-dead gorgeous, I thought it was a mermaid, but it was a guy, took me by the hand. And I mean, you see, you know, clownfish like in Nemo.
Oh, yeah.
And you see these clams that are, you know, the size of two heads. And we're down there for 20 minutes, and, you know, she took my picture with her, but left the camera on the bottom of the ocean, so I don't have any proof of this. But now, whenever I meet people that, you know, are certified divers, I say, you know, I dove the Great Barrier Reef, and they go, that's our dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can, like scratch that off my bucket list, you know, like.
Pretty much. That,
so I don't have to bother getting certified, you know, I just did it.
Pretty much. Like, I did it because obviously, you know, my husband's Australian, so I figure at some point we would end up there. But I'm also one of those people that just, I like to check things off my list. Like, okay, at some point in my life, I need to be scuba certified. So I'm just do it and not care about like enjoying the experience. Not that it wasn't a great experience, but I hear so many people say they got certified in Catalina or in Cabo or all these other places. And La Jolla is a hard place to get certified, because when you go into the water, you can really only see a foot in front of you. And it's not like there's multicolored fish and stuff, you know, it's very, everything is kind of like the same color.
Yeah.
It's a cool experience, but when you consider the places that other people go to get certified, it's like, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I could have done that.
Probably you should go to a warm climate to do your.
Probably. I was in a 7mm wetsuit when I did that. Yeah, which is basically like, I felt like a snow beast.
Yeah. Sounds like a human condom.
Yeah. I would say like, that's what I felt like, but I'm not quite sure.
So,
yeah.
Hats off to you. What about anything new in medicine?
Thank you.
Week?
Yes, we do. We have a few things to talk about. Let's see. Okay, here we go. People with a tendency for depression and anxiety have a higher risk for heart attacks and are more likely to die from heart-related problems than people with a sunny disposition. Did you know that?
People that are happy. That go for diving classes, fly fishing.
Play golf.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Enjoy the sunshine. First of all, anybody that lives in San Diego should be pretty happy. But there are some people on the road that it's like they don't want to be here and they don't want you to be there either.
We're lucky
it's
to be
called road rage. Yeah. Anyway. So I didn't just get this out of midair. Researchers analyzed data from 1,483 people prone to heart disease and followed them for 5 to 25 years. The participants also completed surveys that included measures of well-being. So these included factors such as mood, concerns about health, relaxed versus anxious disposition, life satisfaction, and energy levels. So the average follow-up was 12 years, during which the researchers counted 208 heart attacks, sudden cardiac deaths, acute coronary syndromes, and surgical events such as stents and bypasses among these participants. When they analyzed the heart-related events against the well-being measures, they found positive well-being was linked to 1/3 reduction in coronary events, which is pretty good. So if you are by nature a cheerful person and look on the bright side of things, you're more likely to be protected from cardiac events. The bummer part is that being a cheerful person doesn't necessarily like, it's not something that can be learned. So the people that were doing the study warned that it's most likely something that you were born with, like if you're happy.
Yeah. So
happy people.
It's kind of like that song, you know, be happy.
Sing it.
If I sang that song, you would not be happy.
I might be laughing, which makes me happy.
My grandson has asked me never to sing again, so.
Really?
I'm going to spare your audience.
That's so sad. Well, instead, give me something else. I mean, you know, you usually have some information on me that trumps my what's new in medicine.
Well, I do. There is a report out of France that the young men's are not as fertile as their fathers. These are men now in their 30s, 25 to 35.
Really?
In France, they found that the men in this age group their sperm counts were 35% lower than their fathers.
Really?
Which is a concern because, you know, you need sperm to father children.
Right.
And normally most young men will have about 60 million per milliliter. You need at least $40 million. If you get down to $20 million, you're basically infertile.
Really?
And they're finding studies in Europe, and they think in the United States as well, that the sperm count is dropping. And there's things that you think that are the cause.
Really?
Yes.
Like what?
Well, your young audience may not want to hear this, but they think environmental factors like marijuana.
Oh.
Could be a
problem. Well, there's a lesson right there.
Yeah, so you may, it may be like mañana yesterday, I'm feeling good, but you may not be able to have any offspring. So
right.
You may want to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is, just smoking. Interestingly, alcohol was not a problem, but smoking seemed to decrease the sperm counts.
Interesting. Maybe. Well, it's a good thing that alcohol wasn't, because alcohol usually promotes. Well,
that's not
you know where I'm going with that.
taking too many hot baths drops.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's scary. Well, I'm glad it doesn't affect women then, because I like a good hot bath.
Yeah, hot baths are good. It raises your growth hormone level. But for the men, I wouldn't hang around a jacuzzi too much.
Wow.
Limit your jacuzzi
time. Tricky.
A third factor is fatty foods seems to be a problem. Fourth issue is sitting a sedentary job, like sitting down for long periods of time. So you want to get up and walk around, and get that circulation going down there.
Interesting.
And the last thing they think is that the phthalates in plastic bottles may be a problem. We talked about drinking water out of bottles, plastic bottles.
That's been sitting in the car?
Yeah, you want to try to avoid that. I would say... do not too many hot baths. You don't want to sit in one place for a long time. Avoid smoking. Avoid marijuana. Avoid fatty foods. And if you're pregnant, the lifestyle of the mother can affect the offspring, the child's ability eventually to make sperm. So make sure the mothers are not smoking when they're carrying their babies.
Oh, interesting! I didn't think about that. So this was just conducted in France, but it sounds like something Americans have a lot of these tendencies as well.
It's somewhat controversial, and they're looking at other population studies. And this was actually in the Wall Street Journal in July 16th. If you want to read the whole article, and this was a peer-reviewed study and looking at large populations in France.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, so there you go.
Okay.
That's something new in medicine.
It is. You trumped mine. That was pretty interesting. You had all my attention on that one. And hopefully our audience members as well. So audience out there, we've got a great show. Stay with us right after this word from our sponsor. We're going to be talking more about, we're with one of the best orthopedic surgeons in San Diego, talking about ankle and foot issues.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I know.
I got a lot of questions.
We'll be right back.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder.
Hello.
Hi. And today we've got an awesome show for you. We're actually sitting here with one of the top orthopedic surgeons in San Diego. So, Dr. Emder, I'm going to let you introduce him.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to introduce Dr. Chodos, who did his undergraduate work at Berkeley University. I went to medical school at UCLA.
Oh, that hurts just a little
that's
bit.
That's a problem for injury USC.
It hurts.
But that's a good medical school. And he did his orthopedic training at the Johns Hopkins in Baltimore.
There's a good resume going on there.
Yeah, so this is pretty impressive. I'm getting shorter as I read his resume.
Yeah.
My resume doesn't quite stand up. But Dr. Chodas is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. But even more specifically, he's specialized in diseases of the foot and ankle. So I guess my first question is, how did you get interested in that area of the body as a subspecialty?
It's very specific.
Well, thank you both for having me here. I think it's like anything in life. You are young and impressionable, and you meet someone who makes a big impression on you. So kudos to Dr. Campbell out in Baltimore.
Oh, very nice.
So what are the common diseases that you see, or what's the common patient that you see?
Well, we see everything from probably teenagers all the way up to the end of life, and each area or each age has different things that you see. We see everything from sports problems to problems from various diseases like diabetes or various types of arthritis, a lot of trauma, wide range of things. Keeps us busy.
So are you seeing, what are common, first top three injuries that you see?
I think in the middle-aged range for sports kind of things, we see a lot of people with Achilles problems, Achilles tendon tears. We see,
and that's the back of the ankle, right?
That is the back of the ankle.
Okay. Just want to be specific here for the blonde.
We see a lot of people with ankle sprains and general twisting injuries, probably one of the more common injuries out there to the foot and ankle, and we see a lot of stress fractures.
So you're not just doing surgery then. You're doing medical treatment of these sprains and breaks and tears, I guess?
Yeah, I would say the majority of things that we see have extensive non-operative options. So surgery should never be the first option unless it's some sort of a crazy thing where there's not a lot of other, choices like a bad injury.
So, if someone has a soft tissue injury, they come into to my office. And I go like, oh, you vault. What am I going to do with it? Because, the ankle is, it's swollen. You touch anywhere and it hurts. And, I find it, extremely difficult patient to evaluate. So I send it to, my friendly orthopedic surgeon. How do you work up these injuries?
I think one of the nice things with orthopedics, especially foot and ankle, is a lot of the anatomy is right there in front of you, just below the skin. So a lot of what we do relies on having a good knowledge of the anatomy and examining someone. I think it's back to kind of the basics of medicine, putting your hands on the problem and trying to figure out what the relevant anatomy in the area is. We also rely on x-rays, sometimes other imaging like MRI or ultrasound or nerve conduction studies, and just try to keep a standardized approach to everything and work our way through the problem.
Do you make a diagnosis right at the time of the injury, or do you wait till the swelling goes down? I mean, how do you approach these patients?
I think it depends on what the problem is. A lot of things that happen when you sprain your ankle that may not be an ankle sprain where you're tearing the ligament. There's a lot of other things that can happen, and I think the human body has a huge capacity to heal. Not everything gets better on its own, and I think part of the trick is figuring out if there's something that doesn't fit the norm that you need to work up more. But there are many things that maybe you're in some fashion better or left unknown because they will get better. And if we found them, we may put them into a class of things that would need something done to make it better. So like, especially with ankle sprains, I think a lot of times we're taking a very non-operative approach. And unless there's something that really jumps out at you as a problem and you reevaluate them a week or two later, if there's any question and make sure things are getting better. And most things like that will improve on their own.
The ankle is probably the most complex joint in the body. So what can we do to prevent injuries to that area of our body?
Yeah, I think ankle sprains, there's a lot of different things that can be done. So there's pretty good evidence about prophylactic bracing. So there's a few studies out there that I can think of, one from, I believe, University of Iowa with the wrestling team, another with the women's volleyball team, I think at University of Pennsylvania, using prophylactic braces on both ankles. Just like when you're watching football games and you see a lot of the linemen have knee braces to try to decrease the risk of an ACL injury with the ankle, you can really decrease the risk of sprains and a lot of problems from rolling the ankle by having a brace on.
So you're talking about putting the brace on while you're being active?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Like while you're dancing around and all of a sudden you fall and break your ankle. Oh, wait, that was just me like a year ago. But other than that...
You broke your ankle?
Yeah, actually it was an intense sprain, but it was like as big as my foot. So that's... I was kind of going to ask, like what's... I mean, initially it's iced, right? Like you put ice on it?
Yeah, I think the rice, rest, ice, elevation, compression is important.
Rice came into play there?
Yeah, or you could throw a pea in front of it. A lot of times I'll put people in immobilization temporarily if they're having trouble bearing weight or very sore or swollen. I think temporary immobilization for a short period of time can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's certain situations where you need to get x-rays and you don't want to blow it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to be a little careful about self-treating to some degree, but I think rest, ice, elevation, compression, ACE wraps can be very...
Why does it swell? Is that just a protective thing?
I think a lot of the swelling, you're tearing things, there's bleeding going on, the tissue's traumatized, and that's a
trauma
response, yes.
How long did it take you to heal, Kendra?
Oh my gosh, it was the worst ever. And I say that because I am so clumsy. I've done this a lot. And that one probably took me, oh gosh, maybe a couple months.
Yeah, that's the problem with that joint, is it's so complex.
Yeah.
I think any ankle sprain that takes, that amount of time, really you want to get that looked at. I think if you're not able to put weight on it, that needs to be evaluated by a medical professional. Mm-hmm. I think if you have an ankle sprain, even if you're able to walk on it, but it's just not improving in a timely fashion, it should be evaluated. Because there are many other things that look like ankle sprains that aren't, that if they're not treated, can be very problematic.
Now, is it true that once you do that, your ankle is like never the same? Is it always weaker? Because sometimes they say if you break a bone, like I've broken my wrist before, as I mentioned, I'm extremely clumsy. I have so many issues. walking into walls.
She didn't come in to see me for either of these problems.
I know. I didn't know you at the time. I wasn't even living in San Diego. But
Excuses.
Have you ever heard the word klutz?
Oh, it was so bad. It was so bad. I was given a lot of gifts, but God just thought, oh, I'm just going to balance her out there with that. This one where she walks into walls and falls on the ground for no reason.
This is the kind of person you can make your practice on.
Yeah. I know. I'm keeping a lot of people in business. That's definitely for sure.
Putting kids through college.
anytime. So they say like when you break your bone and then you, cast it and do all that, it's stronger than it was before. Is that the same with...
Bone is actually kind of amazing because bone is the only tissue in the body that heals with bone. It makes its own thing. It doesn't make scar tissue. Unlike if you tear a ligament or you cut yourself and you get a scar, the bone does not scar.
Mm.
I think to some degree things may never be quite the same again, but ankle sprains are probably the most common orthopedic injury, the most common thing that people see in the emergency room.
Frequently.
And I think one of the issues is that a lot of people that sprain their ankle never get seen by a doctor, so you may be looking at a very selected subpopulation of people that go on to have problems. So I don't think anyone has a real clear idea of how many percentage of an ankle sprain go on to actually be problematic. Some of the numbers that I see in the literature, I think, are extremely high, and I think that's because they're seeing a very skewed population of people that didn't get better.
And so if they say... Obviously, I didn't go in, but for somebody that does not go in, what could that mean? Like, can your ankle set in a different way? I mean, typically that's only something if it's broken, right?
Yeah, well, an ankle sprain, you're going to be tearing ligaments in the ankle, but there's probably at least a dozen different things that look like ankle sprains that aren't. So I think it's very important to get looked at. I think if you have normal sensation in your limb, like you don't have, say, a type of neuropathy like diabetes-induced neuropathy, and it hurts and you're not able to put weight on it, that's a big red flag that you should have that evaluated. If there's deformity, I think if you're getting locking or catching or clicking, it needs to be evaluated. There's a whole set of criteria for the emergency room physicians to use, or if someone presents with an acute sprain called the Ottawa criteria, which based on if people are able to bear weight, where they're tender, where you would need to get x-rays. So you do have to be very careful. There are a lot of other things that can be missed if you don't get it looked at, and those things. So maybe to some degree it's less the sprain and more picking out these other things that need to be treated. You can go on and get chronic ankle instability as well, which
it sounds like that's something I could possibly have, considering the amount of times that I fall down. But
yeah, I think it's actually fairly common out there to various degrees. One of the curious things, if you sprain your ankle and then, say, got an MRI 20, 30 years down the road, you're still going to see that those ligaments are not normal, yet the vast majority of people that have sprained their ankle don't have symptoms from it down the road, or at least not clinically evident symptoms. So things can heal and can do fine.
Hmm.
I think a big thing for the weekend warriors is to prevent the sprain, is to make sure, you know, you warm up before, you know, any rigorous activity, number one. Number two, do a lot of stretching because, you know, we tend to just want to run on the court and, you know, and go full tilt.
I want to see you go full tilt. Like, I just wanted to see you do that.
I get some stories. I
not that you can't. I want to see it.
I think, you know, these are kind of, you know, common sense things our audience can do to make sure that, you know, they don't end up in the doctor's office with a bad sprain. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's very good advice. I think everything in moderation or consistently is very important. I think if you're going out there and just hitting the courts on the weekend, that's just a setup for problems. I think you have to be very careful about how you do it.
And warm up, warm down, do your stretching exercises.
And I don't think it's something you can go out and do one day and not for two, 3 weeks and hope to have a good result.
That's all a good point, and something I should probably start doing. So, and our audience members out there too, stay with us as we get this brief word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back to talk about some other things like stress fractures as well.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care. Just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
So I actually have an experience that I'd like to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I told an earlier show that I told Kendra that I like to do like a surgery a year, or I have been doing a surgery a year. So 25 years ago, I went on this same fly fishing trip that I'm about to go on.
Right.
But the like 3 weeks before I went on this trip, I had the weekend off. And in those days, I was getting like one weekend off a month.
So you got to take advantage of it.
I got to take advantage of it because, you know, my relaxation time is worth more than, you know, your relaxation time because you get every weekend off.
Well, not necessarily. I was working last weekend. Oh. I've got to take care of your patients.
Okay. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to talk to you about that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a young man at that point. I'm 40 years old. And my son at that point is like 12 or 13. We play tennis in the morning, and I think I beat him. And then I think we played for like 3 hours. And then I said, well, let's play again in the afternoon. And he's 13. He says, you know, that's stupid, Daddy. He says, I'm tired, but I'm not as smart as he is. And I go and play against my good friend Joe Gieb another 3 hours of tennis.
And as I'm
running to the net, I hear a pop. The next thing I know, I'm staring at the sky, and I ruptured my Achilles tendon.
Oh, boy.
I was in surgery the next day.
Oh, wow.
And the day after that, I was back doing bronchoscopies, but that's another story.
Mm.
So this would be a great lead into, let's talk about Achilles injuries, because that's kind of why I brought up the thing in the last segment about, you know, stretching and warm up, because these are all the things I didn't do.
Sounds like things I don't even do. Yeah.
And so let's talk about that Achilles injury, because I tell everybody, you know, that kept me from going to the Olympics because.
You know. In what sport again?
Well, actually, I use that excuse for every sport.
Yeah.
I lose a game of ping pong, I said I lost because of my Achilles injury 25 years ago, but that's another story.
I feel like there was someone in one of the last Winter Olympics from China, a doubles figure skater that tore his Achilles about 6 months before and had it fixed, and he was competing in the Olympics. So I hate to burst the bubble there.
I don't tell that story.
Yeah.
tell us about Achilles injuries, because I know there's a surgical and a non-surgical approach. You know, some people walk around in a cast. How do you choose which approach to do?
The Achilles tendon is really an amazing thing when you think about it. This tendon, it's the biggest tendon in the body. It sees on average, with just regular walking, 2-3 times body weight with each step. And if you're out there running, it can be over 10 times body weight. We walk on average probably 10,000 steps a day. So when you go add that up, it's just phenomenal numbers. And if this was a pair of tires, you'd have had it changed a few times over the years. So with the Achilles, what we start to get a lot of times is some wear and tear, some degeneration. It's kind of like the equivalent of arthritis for a tendon. And it can go on to tear. It's not a happy thing when it happens usually. A lot of times it feels like you've been whacked in the back of the heel when you're looking for your son with the baby. Baseball bat, and there's no one standing there.
Yeah. And you're wondering why you can't stand up.
Exactly. It's the Achilles heel. So there are two different ways to treat an Achilles rupture. One option is non-operative, and the other option is with surgery. There's a few different surgical techniques out there. I think both options are reasonable in the right hands and in the right patient. It's something that anytime you have someone with an Achilles rupture, I always go through the options and we talk about the pros and cons of each. If you are going to manage it without surgery, it's very important that almost from the get-go, your ankle needs to be placed in a position where the toes and ankle are downwards, or what we call plantar flexed. If you don't do that, then non-operative management's not going to do very well. So I would say in my practice, the vast majority of people I see with an Achilles rupture end up having surgery for it. And probably one of the biggest contributors to that is they get seen, say, in an urgent care center, emergency room, and maybe they get placed into a boot or a splint, but they're placed into it in a walking position, which pulls the ends of the tendon apart, and you get a blood clot forming between the two sides. You can't bring them back together again, and then things don't heal in a good position. So a lot of times the decision's been made for me before we ever even get to that point. But both options, I think, are very reasonable. There is a higher risk of re-rupture without surgery. There is a higher risk of other complications related probably to the surgery as far as wound problems, infection, adhesions with surgery, which kind of makes sense.
Very interesting. But it is it's a tough injury to come back from. The rehab process for me was, I think it was like a six-month progress process.
Yeah, that's for sure, yes.
So let's talk about other foot issues. What about the diabetic foot?
Diabetic foot.
That's a difficult area to treat on these patients because they usually have problems with circulation. They have problems with decreased sensation, and they tend to get infections, which then can go into infections in the bone, and people can start losing toes and forefoots. Tell us about how you manage the diabetic foot ulcer.
I think prevention is by far the most important thing. So you really don't want to be getting ulcerations. So I think keeping the blood sugars as perfectly controlled as possible is really, really important. I think you want to be checking your feet several times a day between the toes. If you can't see the bottom of your feet, I would consider getting a mirror or something that you can take a look and see the reflection of, or have someone else help you. I think having more than one pair of comfortable fitting shoes, considering getting padded inserts for the shoes to help balance out the stresses. I think these things are extremely important in preventing problems. Once you have a problem, the cat's really out of the bag to a large degree. What my approach is with the diabetic foot with an ulceration is not just to treat the ulcer, but I think you need to ask, why does this person have an ulceration? People get ulceration from the combination a lot of times of lack of sensation and foot that's not plantigrade or flat to the ground. So if you have a bony prominence, or a lot of times with diabetes, the sugar kind of settles out into the tendons and you can get a very tight Achilles tendon, which can put more pressure on the front of the foot. I think you kind of have to look at the whole picture and step back and say, well, why is this a problem? And then not only treat the ulcer or the infection that's acutely at hand, but try to figure out, what can I do to keep this from being a problem later on? If you lose a leg to diabetes, there's about a 50% risk of losing the other leg within 5 years. So it's extremely important, both in cost to the individual and cost to society. Very important.
So at that point, do you also have to work with some of the other doctors? I know as far as diabetics go, circulation's a big deal.
Yeah, I think a lot of times circulation is a huge factor. Other vices that we have out there, smoking is almost like a death sentence, I think, in a lot of ways, with the combination of poorly controlled diabetes and smoking. Mm-hmm. I think managing a lot of these problems, especially in the acute setting, it's extremely important to have a team that you work with. So I have a set of vascular surgeons that I work closely with. I have some infectious disease specialists that I work closely with. Mm-hmm. The internists in the community, the intensivists and the hospitalists in the hospital setting. I think it's extremely important. The endocrinologist, you really want to have a team effort. And I think that's the only way that you're going to have a long-term success. Very important.
You know, I'm always amazed that people that, diabetics with advanced disease, at some point, they need an amputation, whether it be, a digit at the forefoot, below knee amputation. How do you choose which procedure, and what do you know what's best procedure for the patient, and how do you make that decision?
So my goal would be to avoid an amputation, especially a major amputation, meaning something at the ankle level or above, if at all possible. I kind of maybe some degree of simplistic approach. I take a look at the problem, and my first question is the plumbing there? Do they have a blood supply? If they don't, can we get a blood supply? So my vascular surgery colleagues play a huge role. I look at the bony problem, and I say, is this something that I can put back together? Can I take Humpty Dumpty and make a foot out of it that's going to be plantigrade or flat to the ground and not have pressure points? Mm-hmm. And then I look at the soft tissue, and I try to figure out what's going to be left once we get rid of the bad soft tissue, or get, what are the coverage options? My plastic surgery colleagues can be very important in that. And I think you have to look at all three things and then decide what the best option is for the patient. I think during my training and fellowship, despite doing just a year where all we did was foot and ankle, very intensive, and I could probably count on one hand the number of major amputations we were doing. So the goal really is trying to avoid ending up with a major amputation, if at all possible.
And so, as we're talking about trying to avoid amputations, that's obviously more for diabetics, but how can somebody that might not have diabetes kind of avoid these types of problems, not only amputations, but just bone issues, trying to strengthen everything down there?
Yeah, I think just in terms of amputations, if you look at, besides diabetes, anything that can cause neuropathy or nerve problems, so people that drink too much alcohol, for instance, can poison the nerves. Mm-hmm. I think smoking can cause a lot of vascular issues. So once you get outside of that kind of a group, you start running into the people with bad vascular disease. I think just in general, talking about health for bones, there's a very big push these days, and I think it's very important as you get older to have your bone density checked. A DEXA scan takes all of 5 or 10 minutes and can give you an idea of how your bone density is.
What about calcium? We hear drink milk.
Yeah, calcium, I think, is extremely important. But if you have low bone density, taking calcium by itself or calcium and vitamin D is not going to be sufficient. So it's very important to have that checked. Even in San Diego, where you know everyone runs around, oh, it's the sunny Southern California San Diego, there's a very high incidence of low vitamin D levels, which can be a major risk factor for bad bone metabolism or osteomalacia. It can be a factor in fractures. I've had people, including recently, that are relatively young in their early 60s, that are runners, are very active and outside all the time, but with the sunscreen, everyone puts on sunscreen to prevent skin cancer, and mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing and very important, but it also interferes with vitamin D metabolism. So taking extra vitamin D, either a supplement, it can be extremely important.
Ah, tricky. Okay. So we have to think about the skin cancer, but at the same time, get the vitamin D in there. So,
and you can get that checked by a doctor too. They can do a simple blood test that'll tell you where your vitamin D stands. So some of these things are very, very simple and pain-free to have done and can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I have a good friend, a physician, who was just playing with their child and tripped, hit the wall, and broke his ankle. And, he's got it set, but really the problem is he's probably got a vitamin D deficiency.
Interesting.
And osteoporotic at age 35. So maybe we can talk about that on another show. We can do a whole show on vitamin D.
Probably. A whole show on vitamins is probably a good idea.
So I think it's time for a break.
Yeah. So for the time being, audience, stay with us. We'll be right back. We've got a lot more questions for you, Dr. Chodas.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com. Or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Yeah, I'm jumping in on, ahead of Kendra because
No worries.
I've just had like a double latte from Starbucks. Yeah. I'm like really psyched up here about
this. Does that go
segment.
With your whole like vegan, vegetarian, non-gluten thing?
I think one cup of Java a day is probably healthy.
It's okay. In fact, along with one glass of wine.
Coffee is the way most Americans get their antioxidants.
Really? There are antioxidants in coffee.
And secondly, there's a soluble fiber in coffee, which helps you, you know, with the bowel movements.
Yes.
And then the caffeine, a little caffeine is good. So I'm going to give the hey, 3 stars up for coffee. It's, coffee is good, but let's save that for another show.
Doesn't chocolate do that too? I mean, maybe a mocha would be the best combination. Better.
Chocolate's so, my go-to.
So I'm going to give a shout out to Nordstrom's. They don't really sponsor our show.
I love Nordstrom.
But they have their shoe sale going on right now.
Well, they have the whole, it's a massive sale. It's their semi-annual, or their anniversary sales.
The men's shoe sale is going on right now.
I think the women's was cleaned out by Kendra the other day.
So the men's shoe sale is going on, and I called down to see if the shoes I like are on sale. Of course, they're not. So I'm going to have to walk around with the same Prada with holes in them because I can't afford to repair.
Did you say Prada?
Yeah, I did say Prada.
Wow, look at you.
So, go there, girl.
Yeah.
So we have an ankle, a foot specialist here. Let's talk about shoes, and in particular, these... Stiletto.
The heels that I'm wearing right now, which I should take a picture of, that are probably like 5 inches tall, that did come. Where did they come from? Zappos, actually, online. Nice. Go to Zappos. They have really good shoes. In fact, he wrote a really good book, by the way, if you're into business.
Do they have the Prado men's driving shoe ones?
Probably.
All right.
Probably. I'll take a look for you. Show you.
Sounds
just
good.
Pull it up on the Zappos app.
So tell us about
just no heels, please.
I feel like, what's going to happen to me?
I love the heels. I think they make for plenty of good surgical cases.
Yeah, I keep you in business, right?
I think heels are kind of like the Western version of foot binding to a large degree. So I can look at my older patient population, the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and a lot of times you can just look at their feet and you know exactly what kind of pointy high-heeled shoes they were wearing because the toes are just molded into that position.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What about short periods of time, like a couple hours, can women wear those shoes and still be healthy?
Yeah. I think everything in moderation is probably fine to some degree. You know, it's like religion and politics. You don't want to be at any extreme, maybe. I think it's probably not great to be running around in high-heeled shoes day in, day out. I think it can lead to a tight heel cord. I think it can do things to the toes. But here and there, I think it's fine. So if you were to go to, what was this shoe store you were sending?
Zappos is online.
I think if you were going to get a pair of high heels from there, I think just, don't wear them too much.
I wear them all day, every day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off.
I keep my heels just to 3 inches.
Just to.
For me.
That's a good height for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, if you were going to, what's your question? Kendra had a question.
Well, I was going to say, I wear them so much. Like, that's all I wear. That last year when we were in Europe, walking like 10 miles a day and wearing flats, my back started to hurt because my whole body wasn't used to flats. So I'm now, back in my heels and I can run around the world in them. But at the same time, I know this is going to kill me. My mom has had foot surgery. Like she's had, bunions and stuff taken, all that madness. So is that what I have to look forward to?
Possibly. I don't think there's any great connection between bunions and any one specific thing. So it's probably a multifactorial issue that, some people say there's a hereditary component, there's a shoe component. There's probably a lot of different things at play with different types of bunions. But you see a lot of people with bunions that wear high heels or wore narrow pointy shoes in the past. And I think we tell a lot of people that, hey, after we correct your bunion, if you go back to wearing pointy shoes, it may come back. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think the body can be molded. So if you just like with Chinese foot binding, if you're wearing a narrow pointy shoe, your foot gets pushed in that position.
What exactly is a bunion?
I guess from the lay perspective, you get kind of a bump over the inside of the foot on the edge of the big toe, and mm-hmm. the toe deviates so that the toe itself is pointing outwards, and you have this bump on the inside, kind of a little bit of a V shape too.
Is it bone?
It's you don't really form a lot of extra bone. It's more that the joint gets kind of stretched out and angulated. Okay. So things start to drift over, and you end up with tendons that are no longer pulling through the center of rotation. So instead of just pulling the toe up and pulling the toe down, now they pull it up and in or down and in, and you get a progressive deformity potentially over time.
Hmm. What's the perfect shoe that you like to have, you know, your family and your wife, your kids? What do you like to see them in?
I think wearing shoes just in general is probably a good thing, unless you're running around in a tribe in Africa where no one wears shoes and you build up thick calluses. I think, especially back to that question of diabetes in the past, the last segment, it's extremely important to not walk around barefoot. I get people all the time that step on things and don't know it. So it's very important, I think, to wear some type of a shoe. I think a lot of the toe fractures that I see where people stub their foot or kick into things, or when they're walking around the house without shoes on. And I think having something on the foot maybe gives some protection to the little toe or the fourth toe, so you don't catch it on the side of the door when you're walking by too fast. I see that all the time.
I've done that too. Is there anything that can be done for that? Yeah, I did. I just walked right into the wall, broke my toes.
Toes are very resilient, but if it's right. pointing off at an angle, you need to get something done or it's going to heal that way.
Oh, okay.
I think just in general, wearing a comfortable fitting shoe is just important. I think you don't want to be squeezing the toes in. I tell people all the time with bunions or hammer toes, the non-operative option is to make the shoe fit the foot, and the surgical option is to make the foot fit the shoe. So I think you want to make sure that your foot is appropriate for, or your shoe is appropriate for your foot. So a lot of times I'll have people stand on a piece of paper and either have their family or myself just trace out their foot, and you can take the shoe and put it on top of the tracing. And if you're seeing foot extending or toes extending beyond the shoe, you know you're squeezing that foot into the shoe, and it's going to cause pressure points and problems.
Well, absolutely. With my pointy toes, there's like my pointy toed shoes. There's no way that my feet fit into that if you were to stand and draw my feet.
If you wear them for long enough, they'll kind of mold inwards. And
some of my shoes aren't. They do. They mold around my foot.
I meant your foot molding into your shoe.
Oh, well, that probably is happening too.
Let's go. I'd like to change the topic to specialty shoes. If you go back to 1970, there was a company called Roots that made a negative heel shoe, you know, where the forefoot was higher than the heel.
What?
I've been around a long time. So do you have any opinion on the negative heel shoe?
Not really. I can't see that as being particularly comfortable to wear. I think one of the fads right now that we see with running is the minimalist shoe.
That look like
the barefoot
feet?
Running. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, with the toes. Exactly. Those are so unattractive.
They're uncomfortable. I tried them.
Are they uncomfortable? Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
I don't know.
Uncomfortable.
It's, you know, people love them and people hate them. I know that just in the last year, I've started to see more and more people come in with problems almost unique to that. So I think it's like anything. There's benefits and, you know, downsides to everything. And you may solve one problem and create another problem.
Isn't arch support really, like, important?
I think for some people it is. I think a lot of people have enough arch built in. I think everyone pronates, they pronate. And I think a lot of that is just kind of unnecessary.
What do you mean by pronate?
Everyone has very flat feet. And the normal thing, I think we all have typically, the norm is probably a little bit on the flat-footed side. I think it's a great way to sell orthotics or shoes, and people swear by them, but not everyone needs an arch support. I think that's why we've evolved the way we have over millennia. We have that kind of built in, a lot of us.
Now, by doing the whole, like, jamming into the shoe, can you have things happen other than like bunions over time? I mean, could that possibly like fracture your foot or do anything bizarre like that?
You can get stress fractures or other issues once you have a bunion, for instance, where you get transfer of forces to the adjacent toes. The heel puts a lot more pressure on the front of the foot, so you can get problems with those joints. Over time, the joints can start to break down, and people can get what's called metatarsalgia or forefoot pain, usually on the bottom of their foot. They come in and describe that it feels like walking on a pebble.
The ball of your foot?
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Are you doing anything Thursday, 8:30?
Yeah.
Slot open.
I have that problem. That is so bizarre.
Yeah, it's...
But it goes away. It goes in and out. Like, I don't have it all the time. It's just sometimes it comes up and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't even
walk.
Some
people have it where it doesn't go away. And
really? So there's something that can be done about that?
Yeah, it sometimes can be treated without surgery. Sometimes in cases that don't get better, you need to do something surgical.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knew I'd have another problem?
I'd like to change the subject. We have a lot of runners in our audience, of four people. One of them is a runner. What are some of the injuries that pertain to that population that you see?
Yeah, so I see a lot of stress fractures. You can usually tell when the Rock and Roll Marathon, or depending on what city you are, the marathon of that city du jour is coming around, because you start to see people when they're getting into that 20-mile range coming in with stress fractures. The lower extremity especially is prone to that, and especially with running. So we see stress fractures of the metatarsals in the foot. We see stress fractures of the shin bone very commonly with runners.
So you actually, these stress fractures, you actually see them on x-ray, or is it mostly a clinical diagnosis?
So sometimes you can see them on x-ray. Sometimes it's a clinical diagnosis. Sometimes you have to get another imaging study like a bone scan or an MRI to diagnose it. I have the advantage as the specialist, where a lot of people with these problems have seen their internist, and then they've seen an orthopedic surgeon or a podiatrist, and then they come to see me because everyone's scratching their head and they don't have a great answer. The x-rays are negative, and by the time I see them in the office, maybe 3-4 weeks after the problem started, you can see the bone trying to heal, and you can see the changes in the bone that weren't evident early on with a very subtle fracture.
So. And the treatment is just rest, don't run 30 miles.
I think prevention is incredibly important. I think you need to be very careful with your training program, your frequency of running, the intensity, how you build up, your shoes, the surface that you're running on. Typically, with any type of a fracture, I try to get people to the point where they're not hurting and maintain that level for several weeks to give things a chance to heal up and restore the balance. But there are some types of stress fractures where you have to be more aggressive than that.
Great information. We're going to have Dr. Chodas on the show again.
Yeah, now that we're running out of time with all of our questions at the end.
A lot of questions. Yeah. My last question, which you're not going to be able to answer this time, is the perfect running shoe for our runners, but we'll save that for
next time. But a question you can answer. If our audience members have more questions, how do they get a hold of you?
They could call and schedule to see me either at my private practice in Grossmont. The number is 619-462-3131. They could also schedule to see me over at UCSD, where I'm part-time as well.
Very nice.
And then for Dr. Emder, if you need your vitamin D level checked, you can reach me at 619-286-8803 or online at the Healthy Aging Medical Associates.
Perfect.
And if you want to go shoe shopping with Kendra, you can.
Yeah, I'll be at Nordstrom.
No. I'll go with you.
Very nice. Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much for being on the show today. And audience, we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.